Now it's time for us to go to Trumpland. But tonight we're taking a slight detour and we're going to Greenland because, as you know, President Trump has just bought Greenland on his gold Amex. And this is the first broadcast from this part of the United States. And here is Bruce Shapiro standing by a rapidly melting glacier. Welcome to the program, Mr. Shapiro.
The water from the glacier is up to my lower lip, so our time is limited.
Okay, well, let's get stuck straight into it and talk about the first big Second Amendment case the Supremes have taken in a decade.
Well, this is kind of a roiling debate that is escalated in light of the El Paso and Dayton shootings last week. You know, all American big political debates sooner or later ended up being litigated in the Supreme Court, thanks to the unfinished business of the American Constitution, and the meaning of the Second Amendment has long been one of them. New York City has had a law on the books for a while that is among the most restrictive gun ownership laws in the country. It essentially says, yeah, you can own a gun, but you can only carry it to one of, I think it is, seven shooting ranges, legally certified shooting ranges within New York City. You can't carry it out of the city to go hunting. You can't carry it to your country house. You can transport a gun in New York only if it's to one of these ranges. And the gun lobby and gun owners went after this. That's no surprise. And there was a debate in the New York legislature about it. But because the personnel on the U.S. Supreme Court have changed so significantly under President Trump, and specifically Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, who are both viewed as very friendly to a kind of super libertarian view of gun ownership under the Second Amendment. This case that is up before the court now raises the real possibility that the Supreme Court will sharply limit the kind of restrictions that state and local governments can impose on guns. This would be a new departure. About a decade ago, the court had a famous decision called the Heller case involving D.C., in which it said, well, the Second Amendment does guarantee gun ownership, but, and this was one of these narrowly decided 5-4 Supreme Court decisions, but the Second Amendment doesn't mean you can own any gun and doesn't mean states can't regulate it. So that's where things stood. And there's a lot of hope on the gun owner side, gun lobby side, and a lot of concern on the gun control side that the new personnel on the court means that the Supreme Court, rather than issuing some narrow ruling about the New York law, will take the opportunity to set an important big new Second Amendment precedent. So that's really, on the one hand, important. But then this week, post El Paso, post Dayton, in the current climate of debate over gun regulations, five Democratic senators, led by Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, Richard Blumenthal of my state, Connecticut, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, a couple of others, filed a friend of the court brief, which in U.S. Supreme Court terms was nothing short of a hand grenade. It essentially warned the court that the whole gun issue falls into a perception of the court as an increasingly polarized body. And it warned that the court stands a real chance of losing political credibility, of facing demands to expand its members. It just goes on and on and on. It's a really unprecedented intervention trying to shake the court's attention, get it to respond to the political environment. And this, in turn, has roiled legal scholars who aren't used to seeing something like this. It's got the gun lobby hoping that maybe the Supreme Court will go the other way and issue a broad ruling just to spite these Democratic senators. It tells you how intensely the gun issue has come into the middle of American politics, that five U.S. senators have actually intervened with another branch of government in this way.
Has POTUS issued his instructions to the Supremes via tweet?
Well, he has not yet, but that's, you know, that's the essence of the brief in many ways. It points out that Justice Kavanaugh, his nomination was actively supported by the National Rifle Association. It points out all of the sort of gun politics things around Supreme Court nominations that you and I have been talking about for the last couple of years. I think POTUS will eventually weigh in and will say, hey, this makes the court more likely to demand gun rights more than ever, especially because POTUS, who, you know, as of last week was promising to, yes, support background checks, has now fully retreated from that position to the default NRA position. And the hope that he would back some kind of regulations in the wake of these two massacres seems to have faded, and he's kind of defaulted to his usual position. But, you know, my guess is that ultimately the court may choose to decide this case is moot. The state of New York has actually amended its own broader legislation to make this local New York City law less relevant. People are asking the court to move the case. And the Supreme Court likes to avoid cases rather than take them. But it tells you something about how gun politics has, in the space of a few weeks, moved from the sort of anxious edge of politics to the very center of it. And I think we're not done with this one.
Bruce, can we stay in New York City for a few moments and talk about the firing of Officer Daniel Pantaleo?
Well, indeed. Daniel Pantaleo is a New York City police officer, and this, you know, relates to, I think, your next segment, who in 2012 was the man who put Eric Garner, a street corner cigarette dealer, in a chokehold and caused a banned chokehold. That's right, a chokehold that police training says you're not supposed to use. Ignored Eric Garner's pleas, this large, healthy African-American man's pleas, who said, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, and ultimately, Eric Garner died on the spot. A Staten Island jury had refused to indict Officer Pantaleo. The Justice Department had looked into, under President Obama, filing federal civil rights charges. That didn't happen after the election. So now finally, all these years later, from 2012 to 2019, 7 years later, Pantaleo has finally been fired by New York's police commissioner after a long internal investigation. It should be said, though, that the tragedy of Eric Garner's death, which did so much to spark the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the other reactions to police brutality and misconduct directed toward African Americans over the last few years, that the tragedy to the Garner family did not stop with Eric Garner's death. His daughter, Erica, died of a heart attack. His mother died of a heart attack, stepfather, Benjamin Carr, died of a heart attack just last month. This has been an ongoing tragedy for the Garner family, and it has been an open wound in New York City politics and American politics generally. Mayor Bill de Blasio has been quite unequivocal in his desire to see the guy fired. Where the case goes from here, we don't know. But it's a reminder that not all of the fault lines in American politics are about the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. A lot of those fault lines go back years to the Obama years and before. You could even argue that the police violence epidemic, the cases like the death of Eric Garner have a connection to have a deep connection to the long legacy of slavery, which began in 1619 with the landing of the first slaves at Jamestown in Virginia. It's deeply woven into American society. And when we're arguing about, you know, the language of neo-Nazis, the language of white supremacists, the kinds of responses to racial disparities in sentencing, these are issues that transcend the moment, that go deep into the argument America's been having with itself.
Let's remind ourselves that it's the 400-year anniversary this year of the arrival of the first slaves in North America.
That's right, in Jamestown, Virginia. That's how deeply woven these issues are. And of course, you know, it was only in 1955 that legal segregation was completely outlawed, and it was only in 1965 that we saw 64-65 that we saw the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, which are now,
Bruce, I'm sorry, I've got to
relitigated.
I've got to nip you in the bud because we're bailing out. Bruce, broadcasting now from Greenland, he'll be live in the studio next week and appearing at the Antidote Festival on the 1st of September in a panel of on free speech. See you then, Bruce. Ellie Nell on RN.